Hey, Workday Playdate peeps. Welcome back to another episode in our Career 101 series. That's what we're talking about on the show this month. We are tossing the corporate handbook out the window, and we are helping you thrive at work by playing the game differently. So today's episode is called Real Talk, How to Stop Guessing What Your Boss Wants and Start Managing Up with Confidence. Okay, I felt that in my inbox anxiety zone. Because if you've ever stared at a vague Slack message from your boss and thought, do they hate me? This episode is for you. And guess what? Today, we're bringing in a powerhouse expert to help us decode the chaos, Melody Wilding, therapist turned career coach, professor of human behavior, emotions researcher, and your new workplace whisperer. So let's be real, y'all. Navigating your relationship with your manager can feel like trying to read tea leaves in a blackout during Mercury retrograde. So sometimes you just want to stand out. You want to speak up and you want to climb that ladder, but you also don't want to come across as a trying too hard, know-it-all, or worse, needy. And that brings us to our guest, Melody Wilding. Now, she is also a professor of human behavior at Hunter College and the author of Managing Up, and she was recently named one of Insider's most innovative career coaches. With a background in therapy and neuroscience, Melody helps high achievers turn down the self-doubt and turn up the confidence when it comes to managing workplace dynamics. So if you're listening to this right now and you're thinking, is it just me? Let me be clear. It's not just you. Let me give you some data. Y'all know I like a little data to back it up. So according to Gallup, 70% of the variance in team engagement is due to the manager alone. And yet, only 30% of early career professionals say they feel confident communicating with their manager. So, if you're in the should I speak up or stay silent spiral, we see you. You want clarity. You want feedback. You want a real relationship with your boss that doesn't involve decoding emoji tone. And that's what we're unpacking today with Melody Wilding. Let's have a play date. Okay, Melody, welcome to Workday Playdate.
Erin, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm freaking excited. Okay, well, if you're listening and you're not watching, we don't really even put the video on YouTube, but I'm looking behind Melody's right shoulder and I'm seeing a color-coordinated bookshelf and it brings me great joy. So I'm already loving where this is going. Let's set an intention for the show today. What is one word you would want to either give or receive or just have top of mind as we go through today?
I think possibility.
Ooh, yeah. Why that? Tell me a little more.
Yeah, because I think it's very easy, especially we're talking about managing up, which is not always equated with being the most fun topic in the world. And what I hope our conversation does is leave people with a sense of possibility that this is something that can be energizing to you. It can bring you opportunities. It can be more a exploration into like the fun side of experimenting with influence and persuasion. So, and ultimately can give you more control in your day to day. So that's what I hope people take away.
I love it. I love it. I love all the possibilities are endless. Okay. And I want to just start right there because Managing Up is the title of your new book, which I'm so excited for you. It's a beautiful cover. I'm looking at it right now. She also has another beautiful bookshelf over the opposite shoulder with the books strategically placed beautifully. I hope that you did that. If you did that, I'm going to hire you to come to my home. Okay. Okay. Melody, you're hired as a professional organizer as well as a speaker. Okay. So let's just talk about this fundamental skill. When you say managing up, what is it? What do you mean by it? Let's just give managing up 101 to our peeps.
Yes. So for the purposes of this conversation, my definition is managing up is navigating your relationships with the people that have more positional power than you, that have more authority than you. Primarily, that is your boss, but it's not just your boss. We can talk about that because that's a big misconception. And we're also not talking about sucking up, because usually people hear managing up and they automatically jump to that person who is ingratiating themselves, who's running behind the leader with like coffee spilling all over the place, just that kind of look at me, pick me, I'll do anything you say type of mentality. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're actually, what I am advocating for is moving from more of that subordinate mindset, which is just the people pleaser, you're passive, you don't really speak up for your own ideas or what's best for your team or your organization. And instead, moving to a trusted advisor or partnership mentality with your leaders, because you have a lot of value and insight to offer them. And you want to create situations where you're both trying to find win-wins. So a little bit of a redefinition of what it means to manage up.
Yeah, I love it. And I have so many questions within that answer. So, okay, let's start with what you said first about it doesn't have to be your boss. Mm-hmm. So what do you mean when you say that, right? Because when I think of managing up, I think directly above me, but you're right. We are just visible to everyone in our organization. So what do you mean by that?
Yes. Well, if you think about the way organizations operate now, it's actually becoming more and more rare that you have just one boss. You have so many different stakeholders that have more power than you. Yes, they may have title or role power. They may have information or resource power. You may have a project lead, for example, or you may be in a matrix organization where you have a functional lead and you have different people that you're reporting to. Also, I have many clients who they are having to manage up to people even external to their organization, like a client, a vendor, some sort of regulatory partner. So it is not just this kind of that one notch up the chain of command. And if you are smart and strategic about how you are managing your career, then you're also realizing you don't want to make your boss your single point of failure.
Yeah.
If that person leaves, there might be a reorg tomorrow. They may say, you know, I'm done here. My time is finished. You never know. I've had people also say, I feel like my boss's personality changed overnight. And anything can happen. And you want to make sure you have diversification in terms of your allies, your advocates, that it's not just your manager you have visibility with, but you have that bench of people as well.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I've been an entrepreneur for a long time, but I'm thinking back in my corporate days, right? And I'm just thinking about how I really tried as a people pleaser, recovering people pleaser, Melody. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I would say high achieving people pleaser to appease my boss. And you mentioned this earlier, but I'm thinking about how I was just trying to appease her. But I also had to, because I was in a marketing agency. There were so many other directors and senior leaders that I was reporting to or collaborating with. So I totally get this whole notion of, okay, it's just beyond the boss. But what would you say to me, Erin in her 20s? Okay, I'm 42. What would you say to Erin in her 20s, who is the recovering people, well, who not even recovering, she is a people pleaser. She's super high achieving. What would you tell her about managing up? Is there a difference with people like me and maybe my peeps out there? That's what we call our community, the peeps. And I do know a lot of them are feeling what I'm saying. So, okay.
I mean, I feel what you're saying because I am also in the recovering people pleaser club.
Yeah.
And, you know, they say we teach what we most need to learn. And Amen. That's been absolutely true throughout my career. And so even that relationship with authority, not being deferential, not falling into self-sabotaging, permission seeking around more dominant personalities, that has absolutely been my journey. And the vast majority of clients that I work with, it doesn't matter if they're analyst level. I've worked with people all the way up to the C-suite, even CEOs who still struggle with this because you take yourself everywhere. And what I will say is that the flip side of being a people pleaser is actually you have very refined and sophisticated emotional intelligence. And that, if you know how to channel it correctly, that can be your greatest competitive advantage when you are managing up, because you are perceptive. You are picking up on some of those subtle signals about how does my boss communicate, or when I notice they really resonate with something, what worked about the framing there, the words that I chose. Maybe you're in a meeting and you notice a few different executives are disengaging, and that allows you to adjust your presentation on the fly. That sort of thoughtfulness, being attuned to other people's feelings, the empathy of being able to relate to what are their pain points, their goals, their aspirations, all of that informs your ability to influence them so much more effectively. But because you are someone who is very caring and thoughtful, you do it in a way that is high integrity, not in a Machiavellian way. So that's what I would say, is that we want to find the balance where you're not using that nature against you. You are using it to work for you and serve you in that situation.
Oh my God, I love it. Okay. I love that you said influence, number one. And I love that you're letting it work for you, and you're still in that service mentality. So I want to talk about this because those sensitive strivers, right? The people who are ambitious, but they're also deeply empathetic. If we were talking to those people today and we were thinking, okay, because I'm an empath too. Listen, I feel all the things. We feel so deeply. We care so deeply. And truly, it's a blessing and a curse. What is one mindset shift that you could give us to tweak and reframe managing up, or how we look at managing up?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the book itself is framed around these 10 conversations for managing up. And we can get into that a little bit more. But one of those conversations, the one that the people pleasers really struggle with a lot, is the boundaries conversation. How do I push that? Say no, set limits, because you have to straddle this fine line of being a team player, but you don't want to be a total pushover. So how do you do that? And usually as the people pleaser, we just, when something comes in, another request, another thing is asked of your team, we usually fall into the fawning response. We have fight, flight, or fawn. Fawn is just the, sure, I can take care of it. Yep, no problem. We don't push back. And so when you do that, you are doing yourself and your leader a disservice in a huge way. You, because yes, obviously you can take on too much, you're going to burn out. But also what many people who are sensitive strivers, as you said, that's my term for people who are both highly sensitive and highly driven and high achieving, what you don't realize is that tendency to help many times creates this perception that you don't know how to prioritize. And I can't tell you how many times people have come to me and at their performance review or at advancement time are told, well, we're not going to give you a bigger scope because it already seems like you're struggling to handle what you have. And so we think we're being helpful. We're being the team player, but it's negatively creating this perception up the chain of command. So that's how it hurts you. But also realize that there is a tactful way to set limits. We could talk about how you do that because there's plenty of frameworks in that chapter. But when you do it tactfully and diplomatically, actually, you're doing it in service of your leader, because from where you sit, you are surfacing trade-offs, risks, dependencies that they may not be able to see. And that is part of your obligation in your role. Just as it is with the visibility conversation, you're not tooting your own horn to be selfish and for the sake of it. You are surfacing and escalating things that your leader needs to run up to their own leaders, because that's how your team gets resources, gets decision makers in the room where these choices are being made. And so instead of seeing all of these things as like, oh, who am I to do this? I don't want to impose. actually look at it from the other side, that these are actually obligations, part of the core responsibilities you have in your role.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Erin in 2007 could have used this knowledge. Okay. Truly, like this is a wonderful framework. I feel like I have so many ways I want to spin this. I'm like, do I want to go down the boundaries? Do I want to talk about the 10 crucial conversations? Take me where you want to go. Let's choose your own adventure, Melody. Tell me what makes sense.
Yes, but I'll lead us back the rabbit trail to the to the boundaries conversation.
Okay,
But let's zoom out to the 10 conversations framework, because yes, this is important. And why I structured it this way is because most of us, even the most experienced people I work with, I actually surveyed about 12,000 people for this book. And I asked, like, what does managing up mean to you?
Mm.
And most of them said that throughout their career, they were given these, pithy, fragmented statements about be proactive, take initiative, make sure you're making your boss look good. Okay, but right, how do you actually implement that? And what do you do when someone pushes back or gets upset that you set a limit, for example, or you have to give some tricky feedback about a stakeholder's personality? There's not a lot of nuance to that. So it was really missing this depth of the skill. And there's so many different facets to managing up. It is not just getting in your boss's head. That is step one, which I'll talk about in a moment, but it goes all the way to talking about advancement, money, and even quitting. That's actually the last conversation in the framework, because even as you're transitioning out of a role or an organization, that is still a moment where you have to manage perception in your relationships. Now, all of that said, we start with the five most foundational conversations. These are what really help us build trust, rapport, credibility that we can draft on later for some of the more advanced conversations. Let's put it that way. So we start out with alignment, which is, how are you making sure you are on the same page with the people around you about what success looks like, so you are not wasting time or spinning your wheels? You are working on the most promotable, important work. So that's alignment. Then we have styles. If alignment is what we are focused on, then styles is, how do we accomplish it when we have to work with people that are different from us, specifically in their preferences, how they communicate, how they approach the work. And that gives way to ownership. So now we're in a position to pitch our ideas, our proposals, get buy-in in a way that actually resonates with the other person. But sometimes when we take ownership, we can take too much ownership. And yeah, that's where we get to the boundaries conversation of how do I set those limits? Then we talk about feedback.
I want to go. Okay, give me the five. And then we'll come back to boundaries, because I think this is so important. Keep going. Keep going. Yes. Okay.
So the last of the five most foundational is feedback. How do you speak up about some of those maybe annoying idiosyncrasies that are preventing you from doing your work in the best way possible?
Love it. Love it. Okay, Playdate peeps, here's the deal. I had to take a quick break from this amazing episode with Melody to talk to you about one of our most exciting workshops, Career 101. If you're ready to turn your new hires or interns into confident, career-ready rock stars, this is the workshop for you. It's part improv show, part professional glow up. Really, the improv show is the team, not us. In this high-energy, highly interactive session, available in person for up to 100 people or virtually for up to 50 people on Zoom, our expert improv facilitators teach the ultimate workplace equation: positivity plus perseverance equals possibilities. Boom, mic drop. Your team will learn how to stay motivated even when no one's watching, how to make the most of every opportunity, and how to build connections that actually move their career forward. It's perfect for interns, new grads, or anyone starting out. This is career prep with a twist. So ditch the boring onboarding and let's improve it. Learn more at www.learntoimproveit.com. That's learntoimproveit.com, or click the link to learn more in the show notes. Let's get back to the playdate. So I'm so glad you're here on the show while we're talking about Career 101, because I wish in my early career, I had this framework. I wish I knew, number one, I have to be in alignment. I have to, number two, know my style and my other and the people around me's style. Number three, tell me number three again. Number three is, I know four is ownership. Is ownership, which I know a lot of us high achieving empaths, right? You're sensitive drivers. We tend to take a lot of ownership, which leads to number four, boundaries, which number five is feedback. And I truly think if I was sitting here today in my, no matter where you are in your career, but I just think back to where I was as a new leader myself, managing my own team, but also managing way, way, way up as like a junior account manager. Let's just go there. That's where I was. So I'm managing down, I'm managing up. You're managing all around. This framework makes so much sense. So in the book, you go into detail on each one. I would love to go into a little bit more detail on boundaries. Let's talk boundaries.
Yes. So as I said, when we think about boundaries, we either fall into this very passive reaction of like, sure, got it, or a very defensive reaction because we're already at the end of our rope. We're frustrated and we just snap and say like, how could you possibly think you can give me one more thing? And so we don't want either of those extremes. We want to find the middle ground. And something that helps you do that is asking questions first. Mm. It feels so painfully simple, but the psychology behind it is important because it helps you buy time so that you're not falling into that knee-jerk response. And it helps you get more information about the request because on the surface of it, someone asking you to join this other meeting or run this committee or create this deliverable, you might say, that's not worth my time. But actually, when you dig a little bit deeper, you find out, oh, it's going to mean I get to partner with this person, or I get to sit in on this skip level meeting, or I get to use this AI tool, which would be really useful for me to have that experience. So when you ask those questions, like there's probably a list of a dozen different questions you can ask in the book, everything from what's driving the urgency here? Because us people pleasers, we always feel like something needs to be done today.
Yeah.
Yeah. When someone else's definition of, oh, could you get to this soon is 2 weeks from now. So what's driving the urgency here? Who else is involved or who else will this be visible to? Do you see this being a one-off request or becoming something that's ongoing that we take on? All of those different questions can help you just get under the hood. And it creates this perception and really does show like, I am coming to the table to try to understand this request, not just saying no and shutting you down. So you're approaching it more as a reasonable partner.
I love it. Okay. Which ties into yes and, which is literally one of the biggest themes of improv comedy. Mm-hmm. Questions are just redirecting the no that you're going to give them if you can't do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's also not shutting them down. It's giving them opportunity to share more information. I freaking love this. And I have to tell you, okay, like truly, as somebody who, like, let me just tell you what I just did in my personal life, Melody. I just changed the notifications on my phone to be completely silent, even my text messages. So I literally don't even know if I get a text message unless I press the little dot. You know why? Because as a people pleaser, the urgency of every text, the urgency of every little ding on my phone, which I never have my phone on ring, was driving me bananas. And that feeling right there is what I used to feel back in the day, truly in my 20s. And I even write about this in my book. We talk about the blinking red light. Like I didn't have a way to turn off the stinking red light on my phone. So I knew it was always a request. It was always something. So asking questions, leading up to the no or the redirection of that no, or putting some boundaries in place. First of all, I love inquisitive people. People who are curious always whether you're buying time or you genuinely are curious, you make the other person feel heard and valued. So people need that all around. And I will say this as a people leader myself, I feel like my team does a great job of that. They really do. Because sometimes you need to even set the expectation yourself as a leader, because you might have somebody who is your direct report asking you questions that you have not probably thought through. And those questions can lead to things slowing down, things feeling more peaceful, things being more prioritized than others, having a flow and a timeline that instead of now, now, now. So I love this. So hard. Okay, so you've got 1 through 5 in these crucial conversations. Do you want to tell me 6 through 10, or do you just want to tell me the 3 hardest? What are the 3 hardest of your 10?
Well, that I think that we'll kind of pick up on the 6 through 10 as well.
Okay.
So
okay.
I tend to find, yes, boundaries is very hard. We also have visibility can be challenging in a number of ways. I think most because of our own mindset around it and our personal hangups around it. And then I would say money also tends to be a very loaded one for people.
Yeah.
So those are the 3 toughest. What I also want to say is that I feel like styles is one that is most overlooked, but probably the most useful. So we could go there too.
I'm down with that. I want to hear about what you mean by styles. Like when you say, tell me more, tell me that.
Yes. Yeah, so the styles conversation, it's the 2nd conversation, as I said, and it's how do you work with different people that have a different approach than you? And specifically, how do you decode their communication style, but also share and assert your own so you're not lost in the sauce? You make clear what your needs are, but again, you're approaching it as a partnership with the other person. Now, what we know through psychology, there's many different frameworks for this, but they all come down to the same thing, which is that communication styles broadly have 2 dimensions. You have dominance, which is how much control or how quickly does someone like to act. And then you have sociability, which is how much do they prioritize relationships and connection with other people. And so high, low on each of those, you get, again, broadly speaking, 4 different communication styles. In my book, I call them the 4 C's. And so I have a guess what I think you would be. But
I'm nervous now. Okay, wait. Yes,
I'll speak for myself.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll speak for myself first. That I am someone. My primary style is more of the caretaker style, which is someone who is lower in dominance and higher in sociability. And so, caretakers prioritize stability, harmony with other people. They tend to be risk averse because they move more slowly. They want to take in all the information. They want to make sure there's total consensus. They may not give direct feedback or feedback at all because they don't want to hurt people's feelings. So that's the caretaker. And the caretaker tends to really struggle with the opposite style to them, which is what I call the commander, which is someone who is highly dominant and low in sociability. So this is the person who is very direct, who may send you like a 2-word email, like, got it. And then me as a caretaker is like, what did I do to piss them off? Mm-hmm. What am I getting fired? The commander can get frustrated by too much context because they like to move quickly. They want things to the point. They care about results, efficiency, bottom line, results, outcomes. And so when myself as a caretaker starts with, well, let me tell you the background about how we got here and who's been involved, the commander will cut you off and say, you know what? I don't care. I don't need all of that. Just what's the decision you need from me? Which can feel dismissive to us if we don't realize these dynamics are at play. So this is why I say this is so foundational, because so much tension in the workplace comes from people thinking others are difficult.
Yeah.
When in fact, it's just a result of difference. And if we had clarity into these differences and we could just see them more objectively, then I'm much less likely to take that commander's actions personally. I can make selective adaptations about how I choose to flex my own style. Like I can lead with the bottom line and then say, here's the decision I need from you today. There's more details I can get into, but I wanted to give you that right up front so you have that information. And so same message, same goal, but when framed differently, it gets you totally different results. So that's why I say this one is so important, because I just see so many problems come from not understanding this conversation or having it.
So good. And this reminds me of the zones of genius. This is like another place where my team and I have studied, and I'm curious of the other two. You've got commander, you've got caretaker. What are the other two?
Yes. So I'm going to just guess, wild guess, that you may be a cheerleader, which is someone who is high on dominance and high on sociability.
Yeah.
And what that means is that the cheerleader, they tend to move fast. They like dream big. They're ambitious, but they're much more people oriented. So this is the person that loves to share stories. They tend to be a bit higher energy, like more enthusiastic, and they use more emotive language than the commander might. But you can hear how all of these have pluses and minuses, pluses and drawbacks.
Yes. Yes.
The cheerleader, sometimes, because they are more people oriented, they can get a bit caught up in reputation. Like, how does this look? What are people going to think about this? They also can be shiny object seekers. So let's do this, let's do that. Or because they tend to be more bigger picture thinkers, which means they have a bit of trouble getting down to the nitty gritty specifics. So does that resonate?
Melody, you just wrote my resume and my contract for coming to Earth. Yes, yes. No, truly, that is it. And I want to know the opposite, though. What's the other one?
Yes. So the opposite of that is the controller, which is someone who's low in both dimensions. And you're like, how could that be? What does that mean? Well, this person is very process oriented. They deal with things exactly as they are. So they care about like methodology, precision, accuracy. They really are thorough. Tend to be a bit perfectionistic, which again, they can come off as more rigid, not as open to ideas, maybe even a little cold, because they're like, let's just get this done. I really don't care about how your weekend was.
Yeah.
What needs to be done. But they're the people, like they're the protectors of excellence. They're the one who tends to catch a lot of risks. And so that tends to be the opposite. They may get very frustrated with the cheerleader, who feels a bit all over the place and flighty to them, but the cheerleader can get frustrated with the controller because it's like, come on, where's your energy? Why don't you seem to care about anything? And don't worry, we'll figure it out as we go. But that's where some of the clash can come in there.
What if the cheerleader and the controller are married? No, okay. No, that's my husband. Okay, this is so fascinating. I could talk to you literally forever, but I'm just going to say, everybody has to get a copy of your book immediately. What, just to give one last little tidbit to the peeps, if somebody today is like, I want to just go leave this show, I want to press pause, and I want to go lead and manage up with ease and grace, what's one thing you would say to them? What's one fast action tip they could do today?
Well, let's go all the way to the beginning with the alignment conversation, because that is where everything starts. It is never too late to have them. It doesn't matter if you've been in your organization for 6 months or 6 years, if you're a VP or you're just starting out in your role, doesn't matter. You need to be having this early and often. One of my favorite questions to ask from that chapter is whatever your boss asking a leader, what metrics do you talk about with your own manager? Because that gives you really instant clarity around what matters to them.
Yeah.
KPIs and, you know, OKRs, all those fancy words, all of the things that may not show up in the deck, but they're going to care a heck of a lot about. And so that, what metrics are you most asked about, or do you most often discuss with your leader? That can be really clarifying.
Oh my God. So good. So good. I love that. Yeah. I'm going to ask that to my clients. I'm like, who am I going to manage up to? That's a great question. That's a great question. Okay. So this is my final question for you. I ask every guest. This is Workday Playdate. How, Melody, are you going to make work more playful today?
Oh, that's so fun. I'm working on a new program all about managing up. And honestly, I was excited for this conversation because learning to play more in my work is really uncomfortable for me. And this sort of experimentation, iteration of when you're creating a program basically from nothing. It's very scary as someone who wants like stability and who wants things just so. And so that's how I'm playing. I'm allowing myself to throw things against the wall and see what works. And, you know, I had a whole doc written today and I was like, you know what? This isn't working. I'm starting over fresh.
Yes.
And so I'm allowing myself to see that as part of the process to get to what it needs to be.
I love it. Okay. And tell me this, how can people find you? People are going to want to find you. Where can they get the book? Tell us the best place to find you.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. This is a fun conversation, just as I expected. And you can head to managingup.com. All of the information about the book is there. And you can buy the book at any of your favorite retailers. All the links are on that page. But make sure you come back to that page and fill out the form, because we give you access to an entire vault of different worksheets, templates from the book. So it really just brings it to life in a different way.
I love it. Okay. Well, I'm so happy we got to connect. And I know our peeps just got so much value from all of the possibilities, full circle, that came from today. So thank you so much, Melody. This is not the last you will hear from me. We're going to stay in touch, friend. Okay.
Amazing.
Thank you. Okay, peeps. You know, I'd love to leave you with a little homework. Here is your Career 101 homework for this week. Step one, I want you to pick one of the 10 key conversations from Melody's book or one from the episode that you've been avoiding. Maybe it's alignment, maybe it's styles, maybe it's setting boundaries. Step two, I want you to schedule 15 minutes this week to draft what you would say to your boss if fear wasn't driving the convo. And step three, I want you to practice it out loud. And bonus points, if you grab a friend, you grab your camera on your phone and hit record, or you can even slide into my DMs. Yes, I said that, on Instagram or LinkedIn and practice with me. So if you're feeling brave, I want you to schedule that conversation and show up as the leader you already are. As always, we'll be back next week with more Workday Playdate wisdom. And if this episode helped you feel seen or supported, I want you to share it with a work bestie. You never know who needs it. Catch you soon. And remember, you're not just working, you're leading with heart, with humor, with radical empathy. I see you. And remember that every workday is a playdate waiting to happen. See you soon.